On a Friday, you're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we're going around the state exploring light displays that really enhance the architecture of historic downtowns and districts. We have the Wisconsin Historical Society as our trusted guide. So what is your favorite town in Wisconsin to visit for the lights? What holiday lights tour has your family made a tradition of going on? And do you have a light display that enhances your town's beauty? Share it with us, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Joe DeRose is a 30-year veteran of the Wisconsin Historical Society. He is survey and registration historian for its Division of Historic Preservation. Joe, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's get on this tour bus right away. Let's head to Cedarburg, southeast part of the state. What charm does this community bring us over the holidays?
Cedarburg is one of my favorite communities, being in preservation, because they based their entire downtown retail strategy on preservation. They understood very early on that they couldn't compete with the malls and the big cities, but they understood that if they had a distinctive downtown, that that would be a lure for people to shop.
Oh, like so, the ambiance and
exactly.
How it feels when you walk down the streets.
Exactly. So they started very early in the early 1970s doing that. And they got their entire downtown listed in the National Register of Historic Places. And the buildings down there were built between 1847 and 1920. And right in the middle of the downtown is a great juxtaposition of architecture. It's the old mill that was built in 1847. And then right next to it is a Wadham's gas station. It's like this Chinese pagoda built in 1920. It's a very early example of corporate architecture, actually. All the Wadham's gas stations were built like Chinese pagodas, and they're very rare these days.
And inside the mill, you can do some shopping?
Sure. It's kind of a mall in a mill, if you will. And Cedarburg is hosting a Taste of Christmas tonight from 5 to 9, where you can stroll the downtown and eat and drink and just enjoy the entire historic neighborhood.
And there's also a bridge there that's preserved as well.
Correct. Yeah, that's the old interurban bridge. That was an early trolley line, if you will. It was a way of getting commuters around from Milwaukee to Cedarburg. And a lot of these bridges have been lost because with the changes in vehicular traffic, changes in train traffic, they just don't support the loads anymore, so they get replaced. So Cedarburg actually has an early example of a bridge.
Well, let's take a visit to Elkhart Lake here in Sheboygan County. There is an old world Christmas market, just in case you can't make it to Germany.
Right. And that's been going on for a number of years. Last year, it was actually voted the number one best holiday market by USA Today's Reader's Choice. So it's a great way of getting an indoor experience, holiday experience. But one of the neat things about Elkhart Lake that a lot of people probably don't realize is that in the 1950s, it was a mecca for road circuit racing. This was very popular
really?
In Europe, having races on county roads and things like that. So this came to Elkhart Lake, and they actually had a circuit where people would bring their race cars and they would race around the countryside. And you can still do, well, I can't say you can still do this, but the course is still there. Please obey the speed limit. But if you Google Elkhart Lake Road Race Circuit, you can find the actual course that the racers went on. And this became so popular that in 1954, Road America was constructed, which is the off-road racing circuit that we still have today.
We're talking with Joe DeRose, taking some history lessons here with the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's with the Division of Historic Preservation. You can join in. We're going on a tour of holiday displays that really shine a light on these historically significant buildings in our downtowns. Do you and your family like to take strolls around different towns to see all the holiday lights and decor? What are some of your favorite spots? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's head north to the shores of Lake Superior, make a stop in Bayfield. What is it like there this time of year?
Well, they have tons of snow right now. So if you're looking for a white Christmas, that's the place to go. I got snowed in up there a couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
Bayfield's another community that embraced its history very early on. They listed their entire community on the National Register of Historic Places, and most of the buildings in the community date to the time period between 1883, when the railroad first came to town, up to 1924. That's when the large employer, the mill in town, closed down. And when you're walking through the community, that's when most of the buildings were constructed. Bayfield also has a unique approach to a visit from Santa Claus. Tomorrow, Santa and Mrs. Claus will be arriving in Bayfield via the ferry from Madeline Island.
Well, it takes all types of transportation,
certainly,
right?
Certainly.
And so that will be going on from 11:30 until 1. And so that's taking the Madeline Island Ferry with a trip with Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus there. While we're up that way, Ashland is next door. What can we find there?
Well, Ashland's yet another community. Embraced their history very early on. They listed their downtown in the National Register. Most of the buildings were constructed from 1884 to 1937. So when you're downtown, you have this sense that you are walking back in time. Like a lot of communities, their streets are named after important people. They're having a holiday craft fair at the Ashland High School tomorrow. It's at on 1900 Beezer Avenue. And Beezer Avenue is named after Martin Beezer, the gentleman who named the community of Ashland. Unfortunately, Mr. Beezer met a tragic end sailing on Schwamigan Bay and drowned when he was sailing between Bayfield and Ashland at the age of 44.
So what, if we go further south, there's also Hayward. And when I think of Hayward, I think of the Berkey Trail. Mm-hmm. What else can we do and see in Hayward?
I'm a 27-year veteran of the Berkey.
Are you really?
Yeah,
congratulations.
That for a number of years.
Oh.
If you're looking for light displays, Hayward arguably has the largest per capita light display you're going to find in Wisconsin. You go in there downtown, and if it doesn't move, it's covered with lights this time of year. And those lights are put up by volunteers, and they'll be up until New Year's Day.
So Hayward is glowing, and that takes a lot of work to get all
of
those lights, and it can be pretty costly for these communities.
Well, the volunteer effort is spectacular up there in everything they do. You mentioned the Birkebeiner ski race. It's largely a volunteer effort, so it doesn't surprise me that they're able to pull something like this off.
And so there's also a Victorian bed and breakfast, the Spider Lake Lodge, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is significant about this lodge?
Well, the Spider Lake Lodge, historically, a lot of people traveled to the Northwoods starting in the 1920s. They would start to go there for vacations, and they would take trains up there, and people from the lodge would meet people at the train station and take them to the lodge. It was their getaway, if you will, to the wilds of the North, and I use the term wilds loosely because these folks were provided with three meals a day, fishing guides, things like that. But it was a very different experience than living in the city.
We're on a tour of architecturally just awesome places in Wisconsin this time of the year. The Wisconsin Historical Society survey and registration historian Joe DeRose is our guide. Is your downtown really decked out for the holidays? What buildings are lit up, and are any on the National Register of Historic Places? Join in with architectural questions, suggestions, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back with more Wisconsin Weekend and Joe DeRose right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're on a tour of architecturally significant places in Wisconsin that are really decked out for the holidays. How is your main street transformed for the season? Did you help put up lights? Have merchants dressed up their storefronts? Do you window stroll and soak in the season. Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us your favorite views of Main Street at WPR Mornings. Joe DeRose is our guide from the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he's put together this list of architecturally significant places in our state and that extra special this time of year because of the lights. Let's go to the phones now with Tom joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Well, my question is just kind of the opposite. Here in Burlington, they tore down this beautiful pavilion that was 100 years old on Riverside Park, and they put it up something like looks like a gas station. And it was heartbreaking, and I called everybody to try and stop it, and I couldn't. I was helpless. So my question is, how can you stop people? Do you join the Wisconsin the Historical Society, to keep people from tearing down some of these beautiful things? We seem to have this thing in this country where old is bad and new is good.
Tom, so thanks so yeah, thank you so much. Being on the National Register is also a really big deal in terms of preservation.
Well, that's true. The National Register, unfortunately, it's largely an honorific designation. It's not a regulatory designation, but it can be used to galvanize support to preserve buildings. That's how it actually got its start back in the 1960s, was in response to demolitions. Unfortunately, what Tom is explaining is very common. So it's what communities undertake is they will try to pass local preservation ordinances which regulate what can and can't be done with buildings. But even those still allow demolition. So unfortunately, there's nothing that's an automatic save for anything. The best choice is just trying to get grassroots support and bring pressure to bear that way.
What are some of the saves, the precious saves you've seen over the years in a long career in preservation?
Well, one of the communities we're going to be talking about, New Glarus, has the old train station there. If you've ever biked on the Sugar River Trail, it's now a place where you can rent bicycles. The train tracks are long gone, but the depot is still there, and that was saved by local folks that understood the importance of that building and wanted to preserve it. So it was a way of they found a use for it and preserved it.
And that community is so rich in its Swiss heritage. How is it transformed at the holidays? What is it like?
Yeah, well, its Swiss heritage dates back to 1937. A gentleman by the name of Edwin Barlow. He's the gentleman that started up the Wilhelm Tell pageant that is still going on today, the celebration of Swiss heritage. He constructed his house in the style of a Swiss chalet. Uh-huh. He hired a Swiss architect to design it and really got the ball rolling in the Swissification, if you will, of the community.
Swissification. Let's go to Jeff now in Pelican Lake. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling about Pelican Lake Hotel. It's located on the east shore of Pelican Lake. This is like the fourth version of the hotel. Right now, it's privately owned, and it's on the National Board of Registry. I don't know if you have a directory there. You could probably look it up. I don't know the facts about that.
What does it look like, Jeff? What is its, what are some of its interesting features?
Right now in the area, it's one of the largest buildings in the area. It's two stories. It has 19 bedrooms. Right now, if you want to use the hotel, you rent the whole hotel. So you get a full-size kitchen, dining room, living room and a bar, and you got 19 bedrooms upstairs.
Oh, wow. That's quite the ability to bring you and a few guests.
it's very good for family reunions. Yeah. We have people that rent it out 3 years in advance.
Wow.
So that's the summer. In the wintertime, it's all decorated Christmas lights. All the lights, the windows are lit up. There's wreaths on the first floor. And right now with the snowfall, the snowbanks are getting kind of high, so it's kind of hard to see from 45.
Joe, are you familiar with this?
Yes, and yeah. I was around when that got listed in the National Register, and Jeff's absolutely right. It's actually a rare survivor of a hotel because so many of these that were built along lakes, that's very valuable property, and they end up getting torn down for something bigger and better. And this is a very distinctive I can't say really a reuse of the building because it's still a hotel, but what Jeff mentions is that it fits a perfect niche for family reunions where you can rent out the whole place. It has a community kitchen that everybody can work in and cook. So it's a great way for families to get together.
And reimagining a building in a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's go to Ripon in Fond du Lac County. It's also has a number of listings on the National Register. What is historic in Ripon?
Well, again, their downtown is a focal point. A lot of the buildings date from the mid-19th century up until the 1930s, again, listed in the National Register. What people may not know, that unless they live in Ripon, is that Ripon actually got its start as a commune back in 1844. People lived in what was known as a longhouse, a large building where everybody lived, and they shared land communally. It was pretty short-lived, but that's how Ripon got its start.
Are there remnants of that?
The longhouse is still there. I believe it's used as an apartment complex now.
That would be a good reuse.
Yep. Right now, one of the fun things, I'm not sure if it's going on quite yet. I don't know if it's been cold enough, but they have an ice rink downtown called the Village Green, where you can go ice skating down there. If you're looking to see if it's open, you can go to their Facebook page, which is Ripon, Wisconsin, and see and check for hours of operation of that.
Talking with Joe DeRose, a survey and registration historian for the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's taking us around the state and also, you know, he's an expert on the National Register of Historic Places. So pick his brain, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Joe, what is one of your favorite spots to visit as this season really ramps up? Is there a place you like to go?
I get around the state quite a bit in my job, and I always like going to Door County. And this time of year, you don't have to fight the big summer crowds, but there's still a lot of activities there. Door County is known for its cherry production. I think if you've been to Door County, mm-hmm. you've had cherry pie, what have you. Just a couple of miles south of Egg Harbor, there's something called the Murphy Farms. It's as you're driving along the highway, you can't miss it. It's these huge gray barns, and the Murphy Farms date back to about World War I, and they were the largest producer of cherries in the county, and they were the ones that got that production going. And while you're up there, you might as well continue up to Egg Harbor, which has a really fun New Year's Day parade. Pretty much anybody is allowed to participate. So you see everything in it, from clowns to people driving decked out golf carts to snowplows that are decorated. Just show up and participate in their parade, and it's a lot of fun.
Are there particular main streets that you think really have been able to combine their historic preservation with some really neat ways this holiday season to, you know, make it feel festive?
Yeah, Mineral Point's another one. People ask me what are the two most historic, if you will, communities in Wisconsin. I always mention Cedarburg and Mineral Point because they really embrace the history of the area. Lots of different shops downtown, lots of galleries, things like that, where you can just stroll from one building to the next. So even if it's pretty nasty outside, you know, you can avoid the elements. In Mineral Point, they have a house museum, the old Gundry House, which was built in 1869 for the Gundry family. It was designed by a Madison architect by the name of Stephen Shipman. He was responsible for designing the dome of the second state capitol and one of the early architects in Wisconsin. When you go to the Gundry House today, it's on a large parcel of land, several acres, and you think, boy, this place must have always been loved. That wasn't the case. In 1936, it was almost torn down, but 11 people got together, bought the house and 9 acres for the whopping sum of $800.
Oh, what a deal.
In the Depression, I'm sure that was a fair amount of money, but they purchased the Gundry House, and that's where the Mineral Point Historical Society got its start in that building. And they're actually hosting a Christmas party tomorrow. They're located at 234 Madison Street. So it's a way of getting some Christmas cheer, but also getting the tour of the building.
Well, let's go really quick here to Don in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Yeah. Really quickly here, about to wrap up.
So you were talking about Door County, and you didn't mention the Graver, which was a big controversy in Sturgeon Bay, like the last 5 years. And we actually got it saved and moved across the bridge 3 times, and now it's back in its original location. So I just wanted to see what your thoughts were.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Don, I think you cut out. You're referring to the granary?
Yes.
Yes,
granary.
Yeah. Again, I like to say that preservation, it's all local. It's not regulatory. If the community wants to preserve something bad enough, they can work towards doing that. And in Sturgeon Bay, they were very successful.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Joe DeRose is the Wisconsin Historical Society's survey historian in the Historic Preservation Division. Coming up, it's the beloved Nutcracker and the story behind how this ballet became such an American holiday hit. Join in with your Nutcracker stories, 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Weekend continues after this news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And a programming heads up here, the House Judiciary Committee finished 2 days of proceedings late last night to consider articles of impeachment against President Trump. Chairman Nadler then announced that voting on those two articles of impeachment would be delayed until this morning. And you can hear live NPR coverage of the voting starting at 9 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's at 9 on WPR and online at WPR.org. Right now, though, we are talking about the story of the Nutcracker that brings the holiday season to life. The cast for this timeless production is made up of talented dancers, and communities all over Wisconsin come together to stage classic ballet set to Tchaikovsky's familiar score. And it was first performed in St. Petersburg, Russia in 1892. Wasn't a smash hit, but a lot has changed since that happened. What do you love about the Nutcracker? Does your family have a tradition of seeing it? We're at 800-642-1234. Sarah Stewart Schumann is Artistic Director of the Madison Ballet. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And we have Maestro Andrew Sewell, who is Music Director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, which has been accompanying the Madison Ballet's production of the Nutcracker for the past 25 years. Andrew, welcome to you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, how did, Andrew, the Nutcracker come about? What was going on in 1892?
Well, in the tradition of the story ballet, Tchaikovsky, among the other composers of his generation, was clearly an important genre. And at that time, it turned out, it was the second to last year of his life. In fact, one of the key things that goes with the Nutcracker, which we may hear later in the program, is the use of a very special instrument that had never been used before, the celeste, which is literally heavenly. It's a keyboard instrument that sounds like bells with a sustaining pedal, and it was incredibly new, and Tchaikovsky very historically and very successfully wrote a beautiful work called the Sugar Plum Fairy Variation in this ballet, and it's come to be loved, you know, worldwide.
Sarah, the first performance, you know, today we look back and think about how big of a deal the Nutcracker is. You just mentioned hundreds of performances and dancing in those. And it's become like the single largest source of revenue for ballet companies. What do you think the appeal is about the Nutcracker?
Well, I think in America, there's a tradition of celebrating the Christmas holiday. Even if you don't celebrate Christmas, whether it's Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate, there is a spirit. I see it right now in Madison. Everything's lit up. There's a cheer. People take more time to spend with their families. And I think the Nutcracker really ties into that. And it's a time of year where you can actually spend a little extra time with your family and maybe do that outing to see a ballet. If you've never seen a ballet, the Nutcracker is pretty accessible to even small children. And I was actually joking about it last night. Sometimes we're in the middle of a performance, and Andrew will back me up on this. There'll be like some child will, in the most quietest point, they'll start to cry. And, you know, sometimes they have to get up and take them out. It's okay. I mean, we're used to that. It's just that, that after so many years of dancing the Nutcracker and putting on the Nutcracker now, I think that's a part of the whole tradition, is taking the whole family or taking your aunt or whoever to have a nice experience. And it really is. The ballet really is a wonderful experience, especially with live music.
And it's so beautiful how those two artistic worlds mesh, the music, the orchestras, and the ballet, and how those two artistic, you know, worlds have come together through the Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So what's come to be part of this tradition, as Sarah mentioned, is not only just the nature of the habit of going to the theatre, but the live music component is really important. And another unique quality of this ballet, as I mentioned, is not only the instrumentation, but the whole setting. It involves a party scene. It involves ensemble numbers, a corps de ballet, then two principal dancers do pas de deux, which means two people, solo dancers, solo variations. It's just got all the components of a successful ballet.
We're talking about the Nutcracker with Andrew Sewell. He's music director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, and Sarah Stewart Schumann, she's artistic director of the Madison Ballet. You can join in with your Nutcracker traditions. What's the best production you've ever seen? What made it stand out to you? Are you part of a Nutcracker production? What's your role? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Andrew, let's listen to some music here. The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, one of the most famous songs from the Nutcracker. First, let's take a listen. You couldn't help but do a little conducting there, I saw.
Well, it's that bass clarinet line that comes do 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 do. And in my current voice of having a cold, fighting on my cold, I can actually get down there. Now, that's even interesting on itself. I mean, the bass clarinet with a celesta, I mean, it's just the mastery of Tchaikovsky really is in the many, many years that I've been doing this, one never gets tired of the music. And I hear that not only from dancers, but musicians themselves in the pit, and they enjoy it very much as a yearly tradition.
And Sarah, you've danced as the Sugar Plum Fairy yourself many, many times. What is that like?
Oh, it's one of my favorite roles that I ever did. Yeah. I mean, I danced a lot of roles in the Nutcracker, but when I started dancing Sugar Plum, it was in 1987 at the Edinburgh Festival, a Scottish-American ballet coming over. We were just a meshed group from America coming over to perform in the Fringe Festival for the Edinburgh Festival in August, which is not the time when you normally do Nutcracker, but they do it differently there in Europe. And so that was what I got to do, and I did it ever since then, and it was probably about 25 years of doing Nutcracker altogether. But yeah, I just love doing Sugar Plum. One of the best parts of doing Sugar Plum is just seeing the children when after the show, if anybody's backstage, or even the other young dancers that are in the company, the way they look at you. It's just like you can tell that they just adore you. And who doesn't like that?
And it takes a village to put on the Nutcracker.
It does.
You have to gather so many dancers. What is that like?
Well, we start, months beforehand auditioning from the community, because one of the things I love about this production, which is choreographed by our former director, W. Earl Smith, is that he utilized the community. And that's something I've done other productions that do that. But for the party scene, it is a party of people from the community. And so we're using some dancers, but we're also using people that are actors or just have a flair. Some of them are parents that have been involved with the organization, and they come back year after year, and their parts really develop. Their characters in the party scene really develop into, like, there's a whole lot going on there that they've created.
Oh, so you can kind of build on it from year to year because
definitely.
You have these traditions of these people who have played these roles.
Yes, and it's there's lots of, if you're really looking at the party scene, there's lots of things going on. So wherever your eye takes you, and of course the lighting design will draw your eye to the main focus, but the entire stage is alive with their own plot of what's happening for their character in that story. And that's what I think makes this party scene particularly fun to watch.
Andrew, how do your orchestra, how do your musicians try to integrate the music and the feelings that are being captured on stage?
Well, that's a good question. Well, it's really driven from the podium. Obviously, each year we repeat, you know, we do 10 performances. But one of the things that I try to do is to make every performance special and unique. And if you're in the pit under my direction, they know that nothing's ever going to be the same way. and the thing that Sarah often and Earl before her and any artistic director would say to their dancers is you've got to listen to the music because it's not just a tape. And we all become creatures of habit in that, oh, well, I always like it this tempo all the time. And that is not the case with live music. And that's what makes the live music component of ballet, and particularly the Nutcracker, so important, so vibrant. Several years ago after the recession, it was just tough times for everyone. And for a couple of years they had to go dark with live music and get back to tape. And there was nothing like when we finally did get back to live music, just the relief that we felt even in the hall, and that there is just something organic, and it's a living organism. Music does that, you know, from the very beginning. And live performance, there's something that captivates young people inside a theatre. One of the parts that I love about the Nutcracker that we do with this production, not only are the sets spectacular, and I've done productions in Columbus and Detroit, in the Detroit area and elsewhere, in the Mother Ginger scene when she's up there and the kids come out and they tumble around, we always have at least, you know, families right behind me. Literally, I could put my arm out and touch them behind me, and they're looking up there. And you see, we get their lights from the stage, so they're just beaming like little angel faces. and there's one spot where the Mother Ginger actually waves to everybody, and so I start waving at her across the footlights, and they go, "What? She's real. She's real. You know, she's waving at me." And it's just kind of, there's that one moment, and I see the chuckles in the musicians, but there's just one moment where you actually, it does become very real. It's like, oh my gosh, it's animated. And, you know, there's a few other little things like that. There, you know, in the original, there's children's voices at the end of scene 9. There is a gunshot, you know, in the music that's part of what is supposed to happen. So we're very careful about that. But it's really fun.
Oh, it's magical. We're talking The Nutcracker with Andrew Sewell. He's music director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, and Sarah Stewart Schumann, artistic director of the Madison Ballet. A shout out to Dance Wisconsin with a cast of more than 80 performing to live music tomorrow at Union Theater in Madison, and the Dance Factory performing The Nutcracker tomorrow at UW-Whitewater. What is your favorite memory from this production? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment, more Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Nutcracker here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A shout out to the Milwaukee Ballet Orchestra, who will play Tchaikovsky's score live with Milwaukee Children's Choir through December 26th. There's Nutcracker in Wonderland at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee a week from today. And the Dubuque City Youth Ballet's production is set for tomorrow evening at the Grand Opera House there in Dubuque. Are you going to see the Nutcracker this season? Join in 800-642-1234. Andrew Sewell is music director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. He stays with us. And Sarah Stewart Schumann, artistic director of the Madison Ballet. Sarah, you have principal dancers in these productions, and they're really busy because they're not just dancing here. They're going elsewhere, I understand.
All over, yeah. Yeah, the dancers that do the top roles, the Sugar Plum Fairy and the Cavalier, often have other engagements, and they're not always doing the same choreography. So they have to deliver the choreography of whatever organization, what they want, what is their choreography for their Nutcracker. And so, yeah, we have one this year, we have three different Sugar Plums and three different Cavaliers. We're lucky to have
dancing at the same time, though.
No. alternating. Yes, definitely. One of our Sugar Plums actually was a principal dancer with the Milwaukee Ballet, and she is now a student at the University of Wisconsin. So
she's
at the tail end of her career, but she's phenomenal. And so we're so happy to have her. That's Janelle. So, but if you actually happen to come a different night, you would see a different cast. Several of the parts change. So her partner, Lucas Segovia, was with the Joffrey Ballet, and he now guests all over the place. And he'll be back up here in a few days to reconnect. And yeah, and we also have a couple that's come up through our ranks that actually danced last night at an event. Michaela King and Jacob Ashley, they've been members of Madison Ballet for many years. Jacob has done Cavalier before, but this is Michaela's first year doing it, and they look fabulous. And then we have another couple. But we have to give the dancers opportunity, and so they don't always dance the same thing every night.
Well, let's bring in Carol now in Appleton. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. I'm happy to say that I'm going to attend the Milwaukee Ballet this Sunday, and we're going to see our son's girlfriend, Elizabeth Harrison, dance as Clara in the Nutcracker.
Oh, fabulous. And is this a tradition for you to go to the Nutcracker?
Well, it is now. We went last year because it was her debut as Clara.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
You're the supporting cast.
All the shows. You better believe it. Yeah. Her twin sister also dances with the Milwaukee Ballet. So it's fun to see both of them on stage.
Well, Carol, thank you so much. And I hope you really enjoy that production. Best of luck to her. Andrew, you brought in the score of the Nutcracker. Two big, thick books here. What's in front of you?
These are the scores, Act 1 and Act 2 of the Nutcracker. There are 15 scenes total. The actual ballet itself, the full musical score, probably runs 2.5 hours, and 2 hours, 20 minutes. And in fact, so these days, each Nutcracker is different, and sometimes with different productions, we've done the full version. Other times, they rearrange scenes. It's all about how we're telling the story as a story ballet. So in this current production with Sarah, the Sugar Plum variation comes at after scene 10. Normally it's at scene 14. The divertissement, which involves six shorter dances with the quarter ballet. There's the Arabian, there's the chocolate, there's the cafe, and Mother Ginger and Russian. These are an opportunity for the quarter ballet to perform and also the young dancers to come up. So really, it's a family-friendly event.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Sarah, thank you for coming in.
Oh, please come and join us. We open on the 20th and we close on the 28th. So there's 10 shows and we hope you'll join us for one of them.
Sarah Stewart-Schumann is Artistic Director of the Madison Ballet and Andrew Sewell, Music Director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a question about the Capitol holiday tree.
With the holidays right around the corner, my coworker and I were talking about all things festive. So Christmas trees, twinkling lights, cookies, and she brought up a really interesting question.
Hi, I'm Andrea, and my question is about the Capitol holiday tree. Governor Tony Evers is accepting homemade-themed ornaments for the tree, and I wanted to know if this tradition was new, and if it's not, how long it's been happening.
We thought this could be a fun and festive question to answer for the Wisconsin Project, so we sent Will Keneally to the holiday tree lighting to find the answer.
In December at the state capitol, it's a common sight to see people crane their necks up at the large evergreen in the middle of the rotunda.
lights to see the tree light up. That's really all it is.
Our daughter loves the Christmas tree, any Christmas tree.
Madison couple Megan and Zach Sweeney brought their kids to the tree lighting ceremony for the first time this year.
Yeah, just Madison, yeah. Always busy on these types of days, and we just happen to have off today, so perfect day to come in and see the lighting and share it with the kids. First time experience for everyone, you know, good family memories.
For Wisconsin kids, those memories can include seeing their own artwork on the tree. Each year, students from around the state send in their ornaments to be hung on the tree. It's a tradition that dates back to 1990. That's according to records from the Department of Administration. Since the early 2000s, themed trees have become more popular. And this year, it's science.
So the way we came to the science theme tree is it was actually an idea that we got from a fifth grader who just said, you know, science is so cool. It's like my favorite subject and everything is science.
Melissa Baldoff works in the governor's office and helped develop the 2019 theme.
And it was also a great connection to the governor's background being a science teacher and his focus on education and, you know, his belief that what's best for our kids is what's best for our state.
The tree themes often focus on topics the governor wants to highlight. In the past decade, themes have ranged from Wisconsin veterans to America's Dairyland. So how do the ornaments get from classroom to tree? The DOA collects all the ornaments students send in and hangs them while stringing the lights on the tree. In fact, anyone can make an ornament, not just students. Eris Steinhardt from Middleton made an ornament that, well, didn't quite make it on the tree.
I did do one, but I didn't want to hang it on the tree because I liked it too much.
What was your ornament inspired by?
All of the elements of stuff, like water. Mine was a water drop.
The Capitol conifer was lit earlier this month. Before the lighting this year, the tree did experience a bit of controversy. Is it a Christmas tree or a holiday tree? Since 1985, the Capitol tree was called a holiday tree. Former Governor Scott Walker changed it to a Christmas tree in 2011, before Governor Evers changed it back to a holiday tree this year. This caused a bit of controversy, and the state assembly even passed a resolution this year declaring it a Christmas tree. Whatever you call it, the tree will continue to draw crowds through the end of December.
Will Keneally brought us this piece on the Capitol holiday tree. And this story idea came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum. Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on the morning show. So what's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@WPR.org. That's mornings@WPR.org, and we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is Wisconsin Weekend on the morning show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.